Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So you're 18, you want to buy a cigarette. Well, soon in Massachusetts, you might not be able to, because just last week, the state Senate passed a bill that raises the legal tobacco buying age in Massachusetts to 21. The legislation now moves forward to the House. Now, supporters say the increase will help prevent youth from smoking, but opponents say it doesn't make sense that 18-year-olds who are legally considered adults can go off to fight a war, they can get married and vote, but not buy cigarettes? Well, we're joined now by pediatrician Jonathan Winnikoff. He supports raising the minimum age to buy tobacco, and he's a pediatrician at the Mass General Hospital for Children. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Magna.
Also with us today to have this good civil debate is civil liberties attorney Harvey Silverglate, who has concerns about the proposed law change on Beacon Hill. Harvey Silverglate, welcome back to the show to you.
Good to be back here.
I'm a bit tongue-tied today. My apologies to everyone. So maybe it's best to hand things over to you two and our listeners. So listeners, I want to hear from you. Do you think that it's right to raise the legal buying age for tobacco to 21, or is it an example of nanny state overreach? If we really want to curb youth smoking, what's the best way to do it? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Okay, so gentlemen, first of all, let me just start off by getting a quick sort of sense from both of you as to why you support or don't support the legislation on Beacon Hill. And Dr. Winnikoff, let me just start with you.
Well, first of all, it's great to see how the public has really rallied around this issue and seen through the smokescreen put out there by the tobacco industry. In a New England Journal of Medicine article this week, we found that 76% of Republicans supported raising the tobacco sales age, and 80% of Democrats supported raising the sales age. And when we ask smokers themselves, they support this. And one of the biggest regrets that most smokers have is that they ever started using tobacco. And part of that is that the majority of smokers begin during adolescence, a period of time when the brain has heightened susceptibility to nicotine addiction. And what people face is really the opposite of free will once they become addicted. And so that's why, in a nutshell, I support raising the tobacco sales age.
Okay, so you see it as a potentially effective way to reduce youth smoking at the vulnerable years when the addiction could become even stronger later on. Okay, so Harvey Silverglate, what's your response to that?
Well, I'm a criminal lawyer, and I have spent a lifetime studying the criminal law and its effects. And I can tell you that prohibiting conduct which hurts only the person who engages in the conduct, smoking is a perfect example, is a very dangerous undertaking. What you end up doing is creating, more often than not, a criminal. You cannot get people to stop doing something that harms themselves by saying, don't do it. What you have to do is figure out a way to make them come to that conclusion themselves. And such modalities are, in fact, available, but it's not, doesn't include a prohibition scheme.
Okay, Harvey, let me just ask you quickly, though. I'm not seeing anything in the bill that would criminalize the conduct, but rather just reduce its availability.
Well, you don't really reduce the availability. It is so simple for somebody under 18 to find somebody over 21 to buy them cigarettes. That is the way it's been done through my lifetime, and I suspect the lifetime of anybody listening to this program. We know that happens.
Right.
And so the real question is, how do you get the young people on their own to not buy and smoke cigarettes?
Well, Dr. Winnikoff,
yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, actually, the data would suggest the opposite, that in fact, this strategy is already working in Needham, Massachusetts. When they raised the tobacco sales age to 21, we saw a 50% reduction in high school smoking. With 95% of all smokers starting before the age of 21, this will reduce the total number of people who ever use tobacco in their lifetime. And remember that tobacco is the leading cause of preventable disease and death in the United States. So this type of life-saving action which promotes free will and promotes choice by reducing addiction, is actually both fully supported by smokers, former smokers, non-smokers, mothers, really every socioeconomic group, including, by the way, the military.
Well, but so, Dr. Winikoff, let me just piggyback off a point that Harvey was making, though, and that is that, you know, a couple things. One is those who are super motivated to pick up a cigarette probably would, regardless of what the law is. So why go through the motions of changing the law?
Well, not really true for people who've never smoked. I mean, when you have a corner store that's selling tobacco right near your high school, you're much more likely to initiate. Plus, the majority of people who buy cigarettes for minors are actually under the age of 21 themselves. So when you have 18 and 19-year-olds in high school distributing to younger smokers, that's what this bill protects against. And I tell you, I had a 15-year-old who came to me and on his physical exam told me he was half-pack-a-day smoker. His mother had dropped him off to high school an hour before school. She, single mother, had to get to work, and the older kids purveyed the cigarettes to him for the first month. And then they started charging him $1 per cigarette. By the time I saw him, half-pack-a-day smoker, and he wasn't able to quit.
Harvey?
I don't think that we can expect that an underage person who gets somebody else to purchase cigarettes for them is going to admit what he or she has done. I think these surveys are inherently inaccurate. What I do think is accurate is an experience that we had back in the late 60s when I was a young lawyer. There was a period of a couple of years when, because of an FCC equal time rule, the anti-smoking organizations got equal time on the electronic media to promote their anti-smoking ads. Every hour that a cigarette company advertised, the anti-cigarette group advertised an hour. And that was the most precipitous decline in smoking in recorded history.
So when presented with both sides of the information, you're saying that we have some evidence that that was all it took to reduce smoking.
Exactly.
Rates. Okay, so Dr. Winikoff, well, I saw you shaking your head a little earlier there.
Well, I think when, you know, you look at the susceptibility of the adolescent brain to nicotine, that the argument that I hear is really what Harvey's portraying is really what the tobacco industry says. And I don't think that the $100 billion a year tobacco industry has the best interest of children at heart. And I think we need to equalize the tobacco sales age to what it is for alcohol, 21. And that actually is what the data support, including what the IOM, that they just released a very, very extensive report on raising the tobacco sales age, demonstrating that it really would precipitously cause a decline in tobacco use.
Well, Dr. Winikoff, let me just follow up with something on that point, because Harvey was talking about, you know, we have this example of basically showing both sides of the story or both sides of the issue vis-a-vis electronic media from the 60s and the effect that that might have had with smoking rates. Similarly, we actually have some evidence of what the effect the law change might have here in Massachusetts, right? Because certain municipalities have already moved forward and done this, what Needham being one of them. So what effect did it have? I mean, it's sort of like a little test case here.
Yeah. So Needham was the first municipality in Massachusetts to raise their tobacco sales age, and that led to a 50% decrease in high school smoking rate. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't also have public health campaigns and public service announcements. I think all that is great, and I would fully support that. But what we're talking about is something that will add to the general downward use of cigarettes and tobacco among youth.
Now, did you say that when after Needham enacted its local ordinance that youth smoking rates went down by 50%?
Yeah.
Did I hear you right?
And that was even in the setting where all the surrounding communities did not raise their tobacco sales.
How long did that 50% drop take?
It took 5 years, and they got down to half of what they had been before.
Okay, Harvey, so let me hear your take on that. So we have a test case here in Massachusetts where an astonishing drop in youth smoking rates happened because of a similar law, but just enacted at the local area. So what's wrong with that?
You are assuming the accuracy of a study that depends upon young people telling somebody whether or not they're smoking on the side. And I, having represented a lot of young people in my career, I can tell you, to get the truth from a person, a young person, where the question is, did you do something bad or did you break the law, is really a foolish undertaking.
But how is this any less accurate than the example that you used from the 60s? Because ultimately it's survey data, right?
The issue was not whether it was a crime. The issue was whether or not advertising tobacco and having counter-advertisements by the anti-smoking groups, when you put the two of them out there, the anti-smoking groups had by far the better argument, and the smoking population saw that. There was a precipitous drop, and it didn't involve any prohibitions. Mm. Prohibitions, whether it's alcohol or whether it's a cigarette, prohibitions historically ultimately backfire.
Right. So, Harvey, hold that thought, because I do want to let Dr. Winikoff respond to that, and we've got a ton of callers who want to join us. I do think, Dr. Winikoff, that this is a compelling moment to introduce the failures of past attempts at prohibition. I mean, we have alcohol prohibition that we know was a failure. There's currently this big discussion about whether marijuana or not should be legal. I mean, I think this is a compelling point that maybe prohibition or forms of it aren't ultimately as effective as other policy instruments.
Well, we've tried education, and what we've still had is very high teen smoking rates, and that's because the marketing of tobacco products with sweet flavors is really geared towards the teenagers. And so when faced with all this evidence, and I think, you know, the possibility of further educational campaigns or doing both the education and raising the tobacco sales age, 109 cities and towns in Massachusetts now have gone forth and raised their tobacco sales age to 21 in advance of this state bill. Mm-hmm. So we have 109 municipalities that have looked at this data and made that decision. And now what we're talking about with this bill is leveling the playing field and making sure that every child in Massachusetts is protected.
Well, we have a bunch of callers who want to join us. Listeners, we're talking about a proposal on Beacon Hill to raise the minimum age to buy cigarettes and e-cigarettes, by the way, in Massachusetts to 21. It would apply statewide if it becomes law. It's passed the state Senate, going to the state House. Governor Charlie Baker hasn't said specifically how he would, whether or not he would sign a bill. He has, you're saying. Okay, hang on. We'll check in on that in just a second. But I do want to get to callers. We're speaking with Dr. Jonathan Winikoff and Harvey Silverglate, who take quite different views on this proposal. So let's start with Haley, who's calling from North Andover. You're on the air, Haley.
Hi.
Hi, what's your thought?
I'm an 18-year-old myself, so I thought I could add a sort of a different perspective to the conversation. So I've seen several of my friends who have, you know, picked up smoking because, you know, it's legal for them to do so now. And so I just wanted to make the point that, you know, sure, it's not going to stop everybody who's my age from smoking, but even if it stops 1, 2, 3 people, doesn't that make it worth it in some sense?
Haley, thank you so much for your call. We'll take that up in just a second, but let's go to Michael now, who's calling from Arlington. You're on the air, Michael.
Hi. I have a son who started smoking in college, graduated college, and moved to Brooklyn, and where a pack of cigarettes costs, I think, $14 now. And within 6 months, he stopped. You know, no problem. He couldn't afford $14 a pack. Why not just raise the price of cigarettes? It would stop a lot of teenagers. A lot of teenagers could not come up with that kind of money, and it would stop a lot more adults.
Mm. So. Michael, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take that on board and turn it to our guests in just a second, but I want to get more callers in here because there's a lot of you. So let's go to Christopher, who's calling from Newport, Rhode Island. You're on the air, Christopher.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to say a couple of things real briefly. First of all, I'm 25 years old, and I started smoking around 18. I knew it was bad for me at the time, but, you know, that's what ended up happening. And I don't really see that, raising the age is going to make all that much of a difference. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think it's really a good idea to take more things away from legal adults. I mean, just look at what happened in 84 with raising the drinking age to 21. I'm not saying it's going to cause the same problems, but it has caused some, including the significant increase in binge drinking and problems that have come as a result of that.
Right. So, Christopher, I'm going to take it back from you because I have another caller there who's kind of making a point on similar lines but from a different perspective. Ryan is calling from Chelmsford. You're on the air, Ryan.
Hi. I'm a teacher working with high school seniors and stuff, and I think this idea of, you know, if an 18-year-old can go to war and can, you know, vote and whatnot sort of disregards the psychological development of an individual. I mean, 18, you're not developed as an adult, and your decision making and whatnot is not there as it is as the same as a 21-year-old.
Right, Ryan. Thank you so much for your call. So, Harvey Silverglate, let's start with what Ryan said. The voice of a teacher there saying you cannot discount the actual psychological development or lack thereof of the adolescent brain, and that's one of the important issues here.
Well, speaking of adolescent brains, the adolescent brain is a brain that you say, don't do this, and they're going to try to do it out of, if nothing else, curiosity. I think the adolescent brain argues in favor of my position. I thought that Christopher made the most important, most interesting observation. He's talking about alcohol, and I represent a lot of college students, and I can tell you, and I don't think anybody who's really going to disagree with what I'm about, that the situation of drinking on campus when the drinking age was lowered was devastating because people engaged in secret drinking, and it has been a disaster.
Right. Harvey, I'm going to take it back from you because it sounds like maybe your call waiting is kicking in there. But Jonathan Winikoff, your response, and we've got just a minute to go here.
Well, actually, what we saw with alcohol when we raised the purchase age to 21 for that, we saw a fourfold decrease in highway deaths, and we saw a decrease in teen overdose rate. So quite the opposite of what we're hearing there. So the true data actually support raising the sales age to 21. I would absolutely support what we're hearing from our teachers, from what we're hearing from our mothers. And just to link this back to the opioid epidemic, when you ask someone and you look at the people who are using heroin now, they're almost always using tobacco. Tobacco, it turns out, is one of the entry-level drugs for opioids. So I just think that if we're looking at the full range of addiction, we want to help our children, this is really the best way to do that.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to just end our conversation here. It's been a fascinating one because we've had a medical perspective and a legal perspective. Somewhere where those two overlap may be the sweet spot for policy in Massachusetts, but we'll see what happens on Beacon Hill. Dr. Jonathan Winikoff, pediatrician at Massachusetts General Hospital, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Maya.
And Harvey Silverglate, civil liberties advocate and attorney with Zellkind, Duncan, and Bernstein LLP. Harvey, always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Righto.
And listeners, let us know what you think. Send us your comment at radioboston.org.